is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
The chairman of Geopolitical Futures, looking at 2022, looking ahead at 2022 for the adversaries, the allies, and the mysteries as we emerge from the pandemic, it is believed, and enter into the transition to a fully recovered global economy. George, a very good evening to you. I begin with Russia because it's in the news everywhere with the threats and the expectations and the visits by dignitaries, the Secretary of State, the Foreign Minister of Russia, all conferring about NATO and Ukraine. However, I read from your predilections at Geopolitical Futures that what we're witnessing is a traditional concern of the of Moscow, of the Kremlin, which is the buffer states. What do you believe Russia must achieve with the buffer states in 2022? Good evening to you, George.
Good evening. And the buffer states are life and death for the Russians. They've been invaded by the Swedes, by the French, twice by the Germans, and they survived because they had space. The invasions would begin in the summer, and it would take them until the winter to reach Moscow, and there they'd be defeated. In 1991, they lost their buffer states. They lost the Western buffer states, the Caucasus, the Central Asia. They were naked in a position they were never in since the 18th century. So this is fundamental to the Russians. It's something they must have, they've always had, and they must at least make sure no one else enters into it. So they've been doing things like Belarus. They've been doing things like the Caucasus, Kazakhstan now. But the big one is Ukraine, the vast space that separates them from Europe. And they at least want to be certain that no one else is in there, and they prefer to be in there themselves.
You say the ambition also includes undermining NATO. Is that necessary in order to restore the comfort of the buffer state?
Well, I think NATO has undermined itself sufficiently that they don't have to work very hard at this. And I'm quite serious about this. NATO of my youth was a very powerful military force. Today, it doesn't contain nearly that much. But the Russians want to make certain that NATO isn't the excuse for going to Ukraine. If the United States agrees that they will continue to do what they've done for the past 30 years, which is not provide weapons to the Ukrainians, they'll be happy. But they want it to look like a victory for them. The psychology is everything.
You present that Russia's size, the stretching between Europe and Asia, is a problem for Russia. Can they solve it?
Theoretically, they could solve it with transportation, but it's also the weather. I mean, in the winter, transportation becomes very, very difficult. So they've got one leg on the Atlantic, one leg on the Baltic, one leg on Pacific. This is a country that is so big, it is unmanageable. And this is why it's always been managed by repression. This is why the Secret Service, the Cheka or the KGB, has always been the heart of Russia. The only way to hold it together is by fear. And that's what they've done. And that's sort of what Putin did.
Relations with China. I have a great big question mark here. What do you expect this year, George?
Well, China has bluffed beautifully. It has bluffed that it is going to be the next economic overlord of the world, that it'll invade Taiwan. None of these things have happened. China is now a deep crisis, an economic crisis that the United States had in 1929. It is a major exporting country, and somebody has to buy that stuff. And at this point, nobody's buying the stuff they had. They've also had irresponsible lending policies at home and so on. So China has reached a point that Japan did in 1990, the United States did in 1929. It is an economic crisis. And as you notice, they're no longer threatening Taiwan or talking about their military prowess. They're trying to hang on.
And therefore, Russia doesn't need to concern itself with the vast border, with the riches of Siberia that are closer to Beijing than they are to Moscow. That's not a concern this year.
Not this year, but remember, during the 20th century, on multiple occasions, the Russians invaded China. the Chinese don't really trust the Russians. The Russians don't really trust the Chinese. This is a flashpoint, but not now.
The forecast in each of these instances, there's a forecast for the year. You indicate no war. No war, despite all these drumbeats. What does Russia get out of this hasty diplomacy and this crisis management?
Well, two things. It really needs the borderlands back. I mean, it needs to be what Russia was for 200-300 years. But also it wants to sit at a table with the United States president in Geneva, as they did in the 50s, as two equal powers, and to show the Russian people that the collapse of the Soviet Union, which many regard as disastrous, that collapse is over, that Russia is back, it is the equal of the United States, and the United States respects it.
Europe is attached to Russia. It's part of Russia, Europe and Russia together. Right now, we have mysteries in Europe about its energy supply because Russia has been delimiting the natural gas flowing. You indicate that Europe must seek equilibrium for all of its partners, avoid war. That's obvious. But without a central authority, who leads, George?
That's exactly the problem. Theoretically, Germany leads. But Germany right now is in great economic trouble. It exports 46% of its GDP. In other words, it's hostage to its customers. If these customers can't buy, Germany goes the way the Chinese did, in real trouble. And right now, its customers in Europe can't buy. But it must hold the EU together. It must hold it together somehow. And the problem is that the relationship with Germany has become exploitative for many countries. Italy, the third largest economy, really is reeling under the rules and the banking protocols of Germany. So we have to be aware that right now, and I think permanently, the EU is coming apart. It was a bad idea to begin with. It was perfect for a time of prosperity, but it cannot survive a crisis.
Does it need a military unit?
Well, it does. The problem is these are countries that have hated each other for years. So a military unit consisting of the United States gone, France and Germany together in a military unit brings back many memories. They don't trust each other. And they've convinced themselves they don't need a military force because nothing threatens them. Well, they may be right. They may be wrong. Logically speaking, the EU without a military force is not really anything. It is a confusing mass of regulations. With a military force, the question is, what language are you going to command in? There are so many languages there. I mean, which language are you going to use? And it's very hard for them to really bring themselves together.
The U.S. is outside of Europe's orbit. At the same time, it is the leader in Europe because of NATO. So let us attach Europe to the U.S. No war is necessary. That's a common theme here. However, the U.S. also is struggling through what you'd have to say is epical partisanship. It comes and goes. It's in a cycle now, peaking. Does that affect our foreign policy?
Historically, it doesn't. Before World War II, the feuding in the United States between the America Firsters and the others and the race issues and all these were there. Pearl Harbor hit and everything went a different direction. Right now, the basic problem is that we don't have allies in Europe in the sense that they don't have a military. They have abandoned NATO. They always accuse the United States of abandoning NATO. They abandoned it. The Germans hardly have any military force whatsoever. The rest of them are in worse shape. In other words, NATO now is the American commitment to defend Europe, while the Europeans focus on economic things.
There are imperatives that you indicate that the U.S. must achieve. First of all, the oceans. What is necessary given the limitations of the size of the Navy today?
Well, first of all, we have to understand why. The United States is the only major country that cannot be invaded by land. Canada is not going to attack us. They'd like to sometimes. Mexico can't. The only dangers we have are the oceans. We must make certain that no one can come and threaten us on the oceans. I happen to think we have fewer platforms but much more effective tools such as anti-ship missiles, aircraft, and so on. So counting ships doesn't tell us how strong we are. But the Chinese certainly backed off after threatening wars and so on and so forth and headed the other way. The Russians aren't even dreaming of it. The Navy, in the end, whatever happens in Eurasia, so long as we have the oceans, we're safe. And that is the foundation of our strategy.
You focus on the Gulf of Mexico. Is it at risk? Is it no longer under U.S. control?
It remains under U.S. control, but if I were a foreign country, that would be the point I'd go after. There are three major ports down there. One is New Orleans. The other is Houston. And the other is Beaumont, Texas, which, believe it or not, is the third largest port in the United States. Cuba creates a strait between the Yucatan Peninsula and the Key West, a very narrow place. And if an enemy force came in there and blocked that, they would block our exports and imports, and they would knock our economy down flat. So it's not that they're going to put missiles in Cuba, but the geography is such that if they came there and we had to engage them and we failed, our economy would be really seriously damaged.
No hegemon in Eurasia. Do we have the power to prevent that happening, George?
Well, the way to do that is to side with various countries. We have a massive alliance in Asia. Japan, South Korea, Taiwan, Philippines, Indonesia, Vietnam, believe it or not, India, Australia. We have a larger alliance against China in Asia than we had against NATO in NATO. This is a very powerful alliance, and it blocks physically China's exit, which is what scares China. China is terrified that the United States is going to mine their ports and make exports impossible because they live off of exports.
Can we save, support, rebuild NATO? Is it possible?
I don't think at this point it is possible because it's not for us to rebuild. The Germans, the Dutch, the Italians, they have to make a decision that they want to have an army and place it, that army, within the command of NATO. So far, it's an academic discussion. They don't have an army. And not having a military force that is significant, they have some, but really significant, means the basic principle of NATO doesn't work, which is shared risk. And the Europeans don't want to share risk.
I'm speaking with George Friedman, the chairman of Geopolitical Futures. We're making forecasts for the year 2022. We're going to turn to Asia next. George has mentioned the People's Republic of China several times. What is the forecast? What are the constraints? What are the present difficulties that we can observe from outside? And then its neighbors in East Asia. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.